It was a clever plan to bring me here. His forked tongue flicked like it was sniffing the air. Is that it? You think you can trap me in this place? Maybe, I said defensively, hoping his tongue couldn't sense my lie. Trapping him here wouldn't be enough. It wouldn't break our connection. You can't destroy the real world from here. I backed up slowly, my senses on fire, but definitely more controlled. Is that what you think? He sneered. That it's me and me alone? Do you really believe I'm the only one who wants to destroy your pathetic world? He let out a cruel laugh that echoed across the stone buildings. You're so naive, just like your father. He thought I didn't know he was trying to undermine me at every turn. But here's a little secret, Godborn. You are the catalyst. You are the reason the world will end. It felt like the black sky was pressing down on me. What? What are you talking about? Even if you defeat me, the gods will never allow you to live. They'll never allow a new race of gods. He lowered his head to the stone floor, coiling his tail slowly. It threatens our powers, creates unbalance. So I used you for my own gain. Imagine what a wonderful surprise it was for me to discover that you're a godborn. You really think I couldn't detect your father's power racing through you? He paused, as if he thought I would respond, but I had nothing to say to this snake. He continued, Those on my side appreciated knowing there was a godborn among us, but I kept your identity to myself. I claimed I had no idea who your parent was, because that would sow mistrust, fighting, and paranoia among the gods. And once I'd created that little breeding ground, they did all the heavy lifting. I simply had to sit back and watch. So you see, Zane Obispo, you were the most glorious surprise of all. An angry growl erupted from my throat as my back paws came to the edge of the stairs. I took deep breaths, trying to restrict the heat inside my veins that was threatening to explode any second. So, Zane, whether you keep me here or not, he added, the gods will kill your father. Do you want to know what happens after that? You turn into a cockroach at midnight? His eyes hardened. You should be thanking me for not revealing your secret. But I didn't do it for you. I figured I'd put those powers to good use. Because in the end, Zane, they won't help you defeat me. You see, you're a little half-breed nothing now. You need training, guidance, a god to teach you. But with your old man on death row, and the other gods wanting you dead, that training will be hard to come by. Join me, and I'll help you attain more power than you ever imagined. I teetered on the edge of the stairs, thinking I'd had enough of everyone's deals. I've got a better idea, I said. How about you release me, and I won't have to kill you? He let out a twisted laugh and inched closer. Spoken like a true weakling. Once Huracan is dead, this place will die, too. And with nothing left here to trap me, I'll head off to the underworld, and I'll take back what's mine. So any way you look at it, I win. I crouched lower, thinking about all the insults kids at school had thrown at me. Uno, McGimster, Freak. How I'd hidden out at home because I didn't want to face them. Weakling. I thought about how the gods had been manipulating me this whole time. Little half-breed nothing. Then I pictured all the people who had my back, my family, my friends, both new and old, and how they deserved my loyalty and protection. These thoughts expanded like the fire burning inside of me until I couldn't contain it all anymore. I knew Apuch's blind spot, the one thing he hadn't considered. "You overlooked something," I growled.
"What's that?"
"I am Zane Obispo, the Storm Runner. I didn't bring you here to trap you," my voice thundered. "I came here to kill you." Before he could react, I struck the first blow, launching myself onto his neck as we hurtled over the step's edge, down, down, down. We spiraled through a muddle of thick jungle and black skies. As I sank my teeth into his slimy scales, I prayed that he didn't bleed maggots. He did. They poured into my mouth as he screamed. At the bottom, we came apart, me spitting up vomit-flavored worms, him coiling tightly, getting ready to strike. Before he lunged at me, I leaped up, and his open jaws chomped only air. As I came out of a mid-air spin, he wrapped his tail around my back legs and pulled hard, slamming my head against the ground. Shockwaves rolled over me. He was too big and too strong, even without his god powers. I slashed his tail with my claws, still resisting the urge to use fire. He released me and retreated. In one swift move, I catapulted over him and took off running. I was as fast as the lightning, shredding the dark sky. Flashes of white lit up the empty.
"Run, little godborn, but I'll catch you no matter how far you go."
I heard puke slithering behind me. It would have been so easy for me to go back to the old world and leave him here. But what was the point? One way or another, I would eventually have to face him. Then Horakan's whispering voice found me.
"You have the blood of a destroyer. Destroy him, Zane."
Oh, sure. Easy for him to say, Mr. Destroyer himself. "I didn't exactly take God Destruction 101, I shouted into the night. The fire burned so hot inside me, I thought I might explode. Apuch was only a few feet behind me, and his monstrous hiss seemed to come at me from every direction. I didn't stop running. Couldn't stop. There, through those trees, a small clearing. The rippling air of the void was just beyond. All I had to do was get to the edge of what looked like an ordinary cliff from here. Increasing my speed, taking giant leaps, I finally reached my destination and spun to face the god of darkness, death, and destruction. Apuch's giant body heaved. His eyes blazed with so much hate I thought it might swallow me whole. He slithered toward me confidently as I backed up slowly, balancing on the edge of the abyss with perfect precision. It was like walking on the rim of the beast back home.
"Join me, Zane. I can show you the full extent of your powers."
"How about I show you my power?" He bared his fangs and hissed.
"You will always be pathetic and weak.
And you'll always be one step behind." He sprang. All my instincts told me to pivot out of his way, let his momentum hurtle him into the abyss. But to break our connection, I had to be the one to end him. It had to be by my hand, or in this case, paw. I held my ground, waiting for the precise moment. I said a silent goodbye to Mom and Brooks, Hondo and Rosie. The moment his razor-sharp fangs sank into my shoulder, I grabbed hold of him and launched us both into the black hole. There was biting, snarling, and clawing. A terrible pain radiated through my whole body.
"Do you like my venom?"
Apuch hissed. I started to black out as his tail coiled around my back legs. We plummeted into a bitter pool of nothingness. I looked up at the moon that was getting smaller and smaller. Apuch constricted further. If I didn't stop him, I'd be overpowered in a matter of seconds. I let out an ear-splitting roar, so loud it shook the abyss. Tighter and tighter he squeezed, crushing my ribs, smothering my lungs. I'd always hoped my last thoughts would be of something good, like the first time I saw Brooks' smile, or the way Rosie's brown eyes shone even in the dark. But when you're about to die, all you can think about is not dying. Or in my case, how rotten it was to be choked by a giant maggot-breeding serpent in a black hole.
The fire will do as you command.
My skin burned. Embers glowed right beneath the surface. Finally, I released it. Massive flames engulfed me. Apooch screamed, and his grip loosened, allowing me to suck in a huge gulp of air. I slipped the front leg free, then my whole upper body. With one last roar, I swiped fiery claws across his scaly face, slashing his eyes. He drew back, and I managed to corkscrew out of his grasp. With all the strength I had left, I thrust him downward with the power of my back legs.
Adios, puke,
I snarled. The last thing I saw was a fire-eaten monster serpent spiraling into the vortex, hissing,
I'll come for you.
Chapter 42. I woke up lying on a stone slab in a cold, dark chamber. There were rusty iron bars on the door, and beyond that was a gloomy hall that smelled of moldy cheese. Wall torches cast long flickering shadows across the darkness. The clanging of metal on stone rang through the place, along with moans, groans, and an occasional, kill me now, which was followed by,
you're already dead.
Crap, was I dead? This had to be Shabalba. As if I'd summoned her with that thought, Ishtab appeared in front of the bars, holding a piece of paper and the pen.
Stand in the presence of a goddess.
I got to my feet awkwardly. What happened? Where am I? Where are my friends?
Shut up and listen, she said. You're my pet now. This is your cell, and once you've paid your penance to the gods, you'll join the others in pounding stone day and night until your bones turn to dust.
Penance? But I killed the stinking one. I cleared my dry throat. Shouldn't that count for, like, early release or something? She grunted, then slipped the paper through the bars.
You will write your pathetic little story on this, and it will serve as a warning to all the gods about what happens to those who break the sacred oath, and to any human who chooses to defy the gods. Don't try to lie. The paper will know if you are telling the truth or not.
Magic paper. Great. Would it know if I exaggerated a little? And if I don't feel like writing anything?
You'll be fed to the hellhounds, one piece at a time.
Hellhounds? Was Rosie around here somewhere? Could I see my dog, at least? She thrust the pen at me.
Get to work.
I took the pen and the tissue-thin paper. It's kind of a long story. Could take a while. I wasn't in any hurry to start pounding stone until my bones turned to dust.
You have one day.
I looked at the flimsy paper. This is just one sheet. I guess you want the SparkNotes version?
The paper will multiply as needed. It comes from Itzam Yi.
Itzam who?
The serpent bird.
That triggered my memory. He has something to do with the world tree, right? Maybe she'd be impressed with my mad Maya history skills. With an annoyed exhale, she said,
He sits on top of it, can see all of creation, and is the greatest master of sorcery and magic this world has ever known.
Right, that serpent bird, I said. Just wanted to be sure. My heart sank. This wasn't how it was supposed to end. I'd killed the worst god of all time, and this was how the gods thanked me? And what about Huracan and Brooks and Hondo and... Ishtab turned to walk away. Wait! When she looked over her shoulder, I said, If I'm in Shabalba, does that mean... She gave me a wicked smile.
Yes, Zain Obispo. You're dead.
The end. Postscript. Don't panic. That's not how my story ends. but I couldn't write any more down because I would have had to lie to protect myself, and the magic paper would have... Huh. I'm not sure what it does when you try to make stuff up. Anyway, everything up until now is absolutely true. So is this next part, but I can't let the gods see it. They can never know the whole story. When I was finally done writing, Ishtab took me from that cell down a putrid-smelling corridor and into a small living room with gold-papered walls, expensive-looking paintings, a black leather wingback chair, two gray velvet sofas, and a glass coffee table covered in fashion magazines.
"Congratulations, little godborn," Ishtab said, smiling. "You actually did it."
Confused, didn't even begin to cover it. What are you talking about? I thought...
Well, quit thinking.
With a wave of her hand, Ishtab changed, as it went from creepy goddess of death to magazine cover model. She wore leather cargo pants with too many zippers to count, a white silk blouse, and a Maya medallion on a long gold chain. Her hair morphed from demon blue to honey brown with streaks of blonde. Even her nasty gray teeth were a sparkling white. Definitely an improvement. She sat down in the wingback chair and spread her arms wide.
"Do you like it? It's one of my private chambers in Shibalba. It used to be so drab and depressing, but I've really livened it up, don't you think? The gold wallpaper is all the way from India. And see that skull painting? O'Keefe, from your neck of the woods."
"Uh-huh," I said, still feeling dazed. Good enough for HGTV, I thought, looking around. That's when I noticed blueprints on easels set up on the other side of the room. There were swatches of fabric, paint samples, and photos attached to the boards with big block lettering, phase one, phase two, and so on. I started again with the most obvious question. What happened to my having to pound stones and...
"Calm down. You're not dead," she said too casually. "I snatched you out of that fire pit you created. Thankfully, you being part god, the snake venom didn't kill you."
She raised her brows expectantly. Thanks, I said.
"Don't you see? I had to give you a good ending. Or I should say, an ending the gods would approve of. This way, they think you received your just reward by dying in battle."
My heart skipped to a quick little beat. Not dead, not dead, not dead. Okay, so now that that little detail was out of the way,
I don't get it. What happened?
"Well, you managed to rid the world of you-know-who, and the war god, Nakone, rounded up Apuch's little pawns, including the Yanto triad. And when the gods found out about the hero twins' manipulation and lies, well, let's just say those boys are getting their just desserts." She sighed.
"Don't worry. Apuch's groupies can't try anything without his power. So it looks like we averted a war. For now. Which is a good thing, because this renovation is taking much longer than I expected."
"No war. Bad guys caught. Puke spinning in darkness forever. So far, so good. Where are my friends? And Huracan?" The sounds of jackhammers and electric saws started up right outside the massive wood doors.
"Pardon the noise," Ishtab said, raising her voice.
She ignored my question and motioned for me to hand over the manuscript.
"By the way," she said, flipping through the pages, "Itsam gifted you this paper from the World Tree."
"Yeah, you said that before, but why would this Itsam dude want to help me?"
"His sole purpose is to keep balance and peace. He doesn't want to see the gods go to war."
"Do you really think my story will convince the gods I'm dead? I'm not the world's best writer."
Ishtab tossed the stack of papers onto the coffee table. "Don't worry," she said. "It's only one piece of evidence. There are more."
"Yeah?" I asked, not sure I wanted to know what they were.
"When you disappeared with you-know-who," Ishtab said, "your body was left in the old world. No pulse, no movement. A little sack of bones. Pathetic, really."
"That's because Pukeface paralyzed me."
"Yes, well, he did you a favor without even knowing it," she said, twisting a diamond ring on her finger.
And of course, my hellhound sealed the deal.
Hellhound? You mean my dog? Anger gripped me when I thought about everything Rosie had been through. You turned her into a monster!
Ishtab dismissed the accusation with a wave of her hand.
Oh, please. She's had quite an adventuresome life here with me. And I couldn't have her going around the underworld looking like Bambi, now could I? She needed to be fierce if she was going to be a hellhound. So she got training and a little makeover.
She's not a hellhound! At that moment, a trail of smoke appeared, and Rosie walked out of it.
Yep, that's right. My dog just materialized. She was twice her normal size, and I have to admit, pretty intimidating. She sniffed in my direction. My throat tightened, and I might have stopped breathing. She was black instead of brown, and she looked like she could murder a dragon in her sleep with those fangs. But she was Rosie, my Rosie.
Hi, girl. I choked as I kneeled. I had to force my tears to stay back.
She swayed sheepishly, and when Ishtab nodded permission, Rosie came over, sniffed me, then began nuzzling me like old times. I thought my heart would burst open. I tugged her closer, burying my face in her neck.
I'm sorry, girl. So sorry.
She let out a little whine.
Not to interrupt your reunion and all, Ishtab said, but we have a lot to cover and there isn't much time.
Where are my friends? Brooks and Jazz and my uncle?
Home, safe and sound.
I felt a sense of relief. Then I wondered which home Ishtab was referring to. Did Brooks even have a home? Was she back in Venice Beach with Jazz? Was she with Quinn? Rosie lay down and turned over so I could scratch her belly, which made Ishtab roll her eyes. Then she said,
Rosie saved you.
Saved me?
The hounds only go to the deceased. They never acknowledge the living. So when Rosie sniffed your motionless cold body, the gods believed you were no longer their problem. It was very kismet, if you ask me.
What?
Never mind. The point is, the gods think you've passed on, which is how you ended up here. But of course, you can't stay here, because you're very much alive.
How'd Rosie end up with you anyway? I asked as I scratched my dog's head.
Any animal that belongs to a god, or in this case, a godborn, is sacred, she said.
Rosie wagged her nub and grunted. Smoke came out of her nose.
Huh. So we had fire-making in common.
And it's rare for animals to come here, Ishtab said. So when Intake saw her, they called me immediately. I knew that she was something special, and you'd need her for what is coming next.
Next?
You asked about your dad.
A sour feeling rose in my stomach. He'd sacrificed everything to claim me, to give me a fighting chance against Apuch. I held my breath, hoping he wasn't.
He's in prison, Ishtab said. A teeny tiny prison, I must say, but at least he's alive. The council isn't stupid enough to kill him. They might need his powers someday.
A booming voice came over a loudspeaker in the ceiling.
New soul on level 3. Thinks he's Shakespeare. Only speaks in iambic pentameter, and I'm getting ready to smash in his face.
Ishtab shook her head and talked into a microphone on her lapel.
Take him to level 5 for a brain soak, then give him 2 days at the spa.
She turned back to me.
Now where were we?
My dad? In jail?
Mental double take. Did she say spa?
Oh, yes. I suppose I should start at the beginning. But listen carefully, because I don't have time to repeat myself.
Ishtab went on to tell me how she'd been working undercover with my dad for weeks, keeping up evil appearances, because the paranoid gods were watching everyone. And when Brooks came to help negotiate Quinn's release, Ishtab saw the magical opportunity.
Opportunity? My head spun.
Brooks said you sent her to find and bring back Apuch.
I knew she wouldn't be able to achieve such a feat. But you needed help from someone who understood the Maya legends and gods, and someone you could rely on. She was a true gift.
Wait a minute. You took away her shape-shifting magic, I said, remembering.
and you tried to kill us at Jack in the Box.
That was good, wasn't it? Her eyes flashed electric blue. I sent my best actors for that one, because I knew the gods had spies everywhere, and I had to take away her power. She was drawing too much attention to you. The gods would have started asking why a supernatural was hanging out with some human kid.
My mind raced. You sent that little... that monster, the Alush. He wasn't faking. He wanted to tear my head off.
True, but he went rogue. It happens sometimes, especially the little ones, always trying to make up for their stout nature. If Brooks hadn't killed him, I would have. Trust me.
She straightened a few magazines, then turned back to me.
You want to know the worst part?
Worse than being attacked by blue demons and crazy rogue monsters?
Having to look like a hideous hag.
She clenched her fists and shook her head.
Why would you have to look like...
Because it's expected of someone sitting on the throne of death.
But if I were a man...
Okay, I get the whole creepy death god costume, but that doesn't explain why you held Quinn prisoner.
She was never a prisoner. She was in training as a spy for a very old, very secret...
She hesitated.
She was working undercover the whole time.
Great. So the gods have a spy network. Does Brooks know her sister was a spy?
She straightened the black beaded pillow. She knows now, which could create a problem for Quinn's cover.
Rosie turned in circles before finding a cozy place to settle on the floor. I didn't want to say anything, but man, did she need a bath. Or two. She smelled like singed hair.
Hang on. Didn't Quinn, stab you with a lightning bolt?
She had to.
To make it look good.
I nodded, catching on. I get it.
My mind raced through everything Ishtab had done, everything she'd been responsible for. All her answers added up. Then I remembered Ms. Cab.
You turned the seers into chickens.
You're a little slow for a godborn, you know that? She said, annoyed.
Think about it. We couldn't have a bunch of seers running around knowing what we were up to, now could we?
For this all to work, it had to be flawless. We had to get you to the old world so your dad could claim you in front of the council if you were to have half a chance at defeating our pooch.
Puke could have killed me.
That was a risk we had to take.
Yeah, because it wasn't your head.
Rosie crooned in agreement.
Why?
I asked. Why would you risk so much to help my dad, to help me?
We... Who's we?
She turned away, paused, then looked back.
Your father's not the only one who broke the sacred oath.
Oh.
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 There are other godborns.
Were other godborns.
Yeah, wasn't expecting that little tidbit of information.
What happened to them?
I thought I saw her wipe off a tear, but she turned too quickly.
We don't know. We sent them away to hide them, but they all died.
It was like their blood couldn't hold the power.
They all died?
My breath whooshed out of me. The whole thing was too depressing.
Then, does that mean I'm going to...
She shrugged, then spun back around with a deep frown.
You seem to have defied the odds. Who knows why you survived?
Maybe because you're Huracan's...
She shivered. I shouldn't be telling you all this. It's ancient history. Right now, the important thing is that you disappear. Do you think you can play dead?
Rosie got to her feet and roared like a lion. Fire spat from her mouth and her eyes. I fell back.
Whoa!
Oops, Ishtab said. She's trained to go into hellhound mode on the command dead.
Stake,
Ishtab commanded, holding up her hand. Rosie settled back into her non-demon mode.
Stake is the command for stop?
I asked.
Unless you want her to rip your enemy to shreds before she barbecues them.
You said something about my playing
I looked at Rosie.
You know what? I said, getting back on topic.
You can't go home.
Why not?
First, because it's no longer there. Had to sort of destroy everything in a huge flood. A good excuse for why you all had to leave so suddenly.
The room spun.
Where am I supposed to go, then? You'll see. But I've cloaked you with powerful shadow magic, so the gods can't detect you. It's quite perfect, if I do say so myself.
But what if... what if the gods come knocking on the underworld's door and I'm not here?
Remember the demons I sent that looked exactly like you?
I couldn't help it. I smiled. She was a serious mastermind. And what about my mom and Hondo and...
they're waiting for you.
Relief spread through me. Where?
You'll see.
But it's not like some deserted, awful place with no internet or tacos, right?
Tacos you can get. Internet, maybe not. And under no circumstances can you use your powers outside the shielded place I'm sending you to. If you do, the gods will pick it up on their radar, and they'll hunt you down and murder you in your sleep. Do you understand?
I really didn't want to think about getting murdered in my sleep. Wait a sec. What am I supposed to do with my powers? Don't I need some kind of training?
She shook her head. Too dangerous. Go to the movies, eat tacos, read books, do what humans do. Live a normal life.
Normal? I'm not normal. Wow. Before, all I'd ever wished was to be like everyone else. And now? I actually liked the way those words made me feel. I didn't even mind the fact that I still had one shorter leg. Yeah, Spark Striker's lightning bolt surgery hadn't permanently fixed it. I kind of thought my limp would have disappeared now that I was a claimed godborn who could control fire, but I guess magic doesn't work that way. Still, it didn't bother me. It didn't seem like a weakness anymore, just part of who I was. And besides, it connected me to my dad, all one leg.
That reminded me. What about Hurakan? I asked Ishtab. Can he come too? I can't let him rot in prison.
Don't worry about him. He'll be fine. He's suffered much worse, believe me, Ishtab said.
Now, do you want to see your human family or not?
She looked at her watch.
Hurry, we have a cab to catch.
There's cab service from Shibalba?
Of course.
At least until I can get Uber to negotiate with me. Postscript. The cab driver was a skeleton decked out like Elvis in a white jumpsuit, sideburns and all, and he belted out Jailhouse Rock the entire 10-minute drive. We couldn't take any roads, especially the heavily watched cosmic ones. So we only had one option. We cruised the ocean. Under the waves, that is. Thanks to Pacific speeding up time for us, it was like being on a roller coaster submarine, which meant everything whizzed by in a blur. Although I'm pretty sure I saw a two-headed shark. This was Pacific's parting gift to me. She had to find a new hiding place. The gods would read my story soon enough, and everyone I'd been trying to protect would be revealed. Even Matt wasn't safe. Stupid truth paper.
Oh, we're here, Elvis said, bursting through breakers.
Imagine going through a crazy car wash at Mach 10. That's what this was like. He pulled to a stop on a white sandy beach lined with swaying palms.
Where are we?
Isla Holbox, Mexico, Ishtab said. Very secluded and surrounded by water, which is the most important part.
Why does the water matter?
Messes up signals, wavelengths, the god's ability to see clearly. Plus it's protected by...
your shadow magic?
Precisely.
I ducked to peer through the windshield.
Whoa.
I couldn't believe what I was seeing. A luxury vacation house, the kind you only read about in adventure books or see in those fancy travel magazines. The place was tucked under tall willowy palms, had two stories, a palapa roof, and thick timbers holding up a massive back porch where hammocks swung in the afternoon sun. A quick glance down the shore in both directions told me we were pretty secluded, with the next house at least 2 football fields away. Rosie barked, whined, and pawed at the car door. When I went to open it, Ishtab grabbed my arm, reached into her pocket, and removed a silver letter opener.
I almost forgot. This is for you. What's this for? I thought it was a weird parting gift. You know, for someone who's part god and has seen ancient magic, you really are lacking in the imagination department, she said. It's your cane slash spear. I had to hide it somewhere. She tapped the end, and the cane popped out. I took it from her. It was just as cool as before. Does the spear still work? Ishtab rolled her eyes and stepped out of the car. Andale, she said. I don't have all day. Leading with my warrior cane, I stepped out of the cab. One more thing, she pointed to the right, past the house and across the jungle. I blinked. Once. Twice. Is that what I think it is? Yep. Rosie hunkered low and covered her eyes with her paws, groaning. Some things hadn't changed. I patted her on the head reassuringly and asked Ishtab, But how the heck did you move a whole volcano? It was your father's idea. She played with the gold bangles dangling from her wrists. It wasn't a bad one either, I have to admit. We couldn't simply leave it in New Mexico. It had too much magic left over in it. So Matt replaced it with a replica, and I, of course, did all the heavy lifting to bring the real one here. And the people on this island didn't wonder when a volcano sprang up out of nowhere? Ishtab shrugged. It happens sometimes. I couldn't take my eyes off my volcano. I almost threw my arms around Ishtab's neck, but stopped when I realized she might strangle me. You obviously approve, she said. Approve? Grinning, I ran my hands over my hair. It's amazing. I created a portal inside that leads to Shebalba. You may use it in case of emergency, Ishtab added. Extreme emergency. Emergency? Why would I have an emergency? You said this place is safe. I said your family and friends are safe. Nowhere is ever entirely safe for someone like you. I clutched my cane. Then I guess it's a good thing I have this, and Rosie. The dynamic duo was together again. Rosie barked in agreement. Ishtab looked down at her. I hate to give her up. She would have made a wonderful hellhound. Then she ducked back into the cab. I'll be seeing you again, Zain Obispo. It's inevitable. As she closed the door, I swore I heard her tell the Esqueleto, Now take me to that dreadful Aztec king. As soon as the cab had disappeared, I saw Mom running barefoot from the house toward me. Her dark hair blew across her face. I hurried over and hugged her. Either she'd shrunk or I'd grown, but either way, it felt great to be home. Yeah, I know it wasn't New Mexico, but home is where my family is. Hondo was right behind her. He shook his head and socked me in the arm. Diablo, you did it! You actually did it! Well, I helped, but still. Diablo? Your new nickname. You earned it by killing the god of death. Totally perfect, right? Yeah. No. Mom was crying, hugging, crying, mumbling, naming every santo in the universe. She wiped her face and said with a smile, I bet you're hungry. We're grilling steaks. ¿Tienes hambre? Maybe something to drink? Rosie half groaned, half whined. Mom blinked and looked down at her for the first time. Hey, girl. She knelt down and scrubbed her neck with both hands. You're even more hermosa than the last time I saw you. Rosie danced in place, fishtail wagging her body. That's what I love about my mom. She always knows the exact right thing to say. We started for the house, and I looked around. Hondo knew who I was searching for. She hasn't been here. Oh. I waited for more, but Hondo didn't say anything else about it. My heart sank. I mean, wouldn't yours? Not that I liked Brooks, as in like her or anything. It for sure wasn't like that between us. Brooks barely tolerated me most of the time. I just wanted to talk to her about everything that had happened. You know, say goodbye on the right note. I mean, she was annoying and brave and controlling. And she was complicated and smart and amazing. I definitely didn't... Never mind. A few minutes later, I was sitting under the palm-covered porch, eating flautas, heavy on the salsa, with Mom and Hondo. I filled them in about everything that had gone down with Apuch and Ishtab. Hondo told me that he and Jazz and Brooks had been sent from the old world back to Venice Beach. Apparently, Jazz had sold his shop there so he could open a new company, Age, Advanced Giant Engineering. And Brooks was with him, wherever he was. The good news was that once the gods read what I had to say, and hopefully they're slow readers, they might give Jazz a pass, since he was in the dark for so long. But Brooks? No chance. She had aided and abetted a wanted criminal. For sure, they wouldn't forgive that. Which meant she would always be in danger. And Quinn? I asked. You mean the gorgeous sister who nailed Ishtab with a bolt? Hondo asked with a wide grin. Okay. Haven't seen her. Not since we got back to Venice. Mom reached over and grabbed my hand. We have so much to talk about. Yeah, like Dad. But there was plenty of time to catch up about him and everything else. I grabbed another flauta and set it on my plate. I'm sorry I dragged you guys into this. This? Hondo looked around. Yeah, it's a real hellhole. But what will you guys do for work? Like, I know how much you loved New Mexico, Mom, and now it's all gone. I can learn to love any place as long as we're together. Mom let out a light laugh. This beautiful house is a gift from Ishtab, and Hondo and I have decided to open a bike and surf shop. Doesn't that sound fun? Like Jazz's? With a few tweaks. Hondo crossed his arms and leaned back. I'm going to offer wrestling lessons for tourist kids. Todo Nacho Libre. And you're going to love the island. Population 1,600 and 26 miles of white beaches. Then his face fell. There's only one downside. Too many people? I teased. No cars allowed. Only golf carts, he said. You know how slow a golf cart is? He shook his head. It's tragic. Familiar footsteps sounded, and when I turned, you wouldn't believe who I saw waltzing through the house. Mr. O and Ms. Cab. Thankfully, she was in human form again. Mr. O grabbed me and pulled me into a tight hug. Héroe! Everyone was a hero, I said, turning to Ms. Cab. Ms. Cab lifted her chin. You're lucky all the seers went back to normal, because if I had to be a chicken one more day... Good to see you too, I said, with a pang of guilt, as I realized that her cover would soon be blown as well. Miss Cab reached into her dress pocket and pulled out a handful of birdseed. She tossed some into her mouth. I figured my own mouth must have been hanging wide open, because she shrugged and said, "In acquired taste." Mom stifled a laugh, and Hondo made a disgusted face. Mr. Ortiz took wonderful care of us while you were away, Mom said. Miss Cab sighed. I suppose. Old fool followed me here just because I told him I'd have dinner with him. Mr. O's face lit up when he looked at Miss Cab. Any guy who could still love someone who'd been a cranky chicken and ate birdseed out of her pocket was a champ in my book. I couldn't let you get away, amor, he said, to which he huffed. We will be very happy on this isla. In separate huts, Ms. Cab reminded him. Turning to me, he raised his bushy brows and asked, And La Muerte? Did she work? I recalled the pepper's effect on Jordan. Definitely took out a bad guy, I said. Mr. O beamed while Ms. Cab popped more birdseed into her mouth and mumbled, Idiots! I laughed. It was her way of saying she cared about us. And one more thing, Zane, she said. Yeah? You owe me an eyeball. After everyone went inside, I headed down to the beach. Rosie raced after me, yelping and jumping in the waves. Being in Xibalba hadn't really changed her. Sure, she looked different on the outside, but inside she was still the dog I had rescued. And now she had rescued me. The sun was melting into the water, and everything had an orange glow. If I had to hole up somewhere, this seemed like a pretty good place. But shadow magic or no shadow magic, I knew I wouldn't stay here forever. Laughter spilled out of the house. I sat on the sand and stared at my legs. My shorter one was a clue about where I'd come from and what I could do. I mean, if I hadn't had a limp, the Spark Striker would never have been able to find my dominant power. I laid back and closed my eyes as Rosie settled next to me. "Tomorrow," I said, "we can hike the beast again." Rosie whined. Then I felt something blocking the sun. I opened my eyes to see a hawk circling overhead.
"Brooks!" I shouted, bolting upright.
She landed nearby, kicking up some sand, which I totally thought she did on purpose. Like I said, she can be annoying. Rosie barreled into her as Brooks shifted back into a human. What, were they like BFFs now? Brooks fell back laughing as she rubbed Rosie's ears.
"Hey, girl!"
I got to my feet, pulled Brooks up, and squeezed her in a bear hug. Man, she smelled good. Like coconut oil and fresh towels.
"Okay," she said, pushing me back. "I can't breathe."
What are you doing here?" I was so excited, I had a hard time standing there without hugging her again.
"Hondo said you were with Jazz, and he didn't know where..."
She rolled her eyes.
"Get real, Zane. You think I wasn't going to get the whole story from you? Besides, I'm a fugitive now."
"Yeah, me too." She tucked her hair behind her ear and straightened her short black jacket.
"So give it up. All of it. And don't leave out any details. Start with you killing Apooch. Oh, and don't leave out waking up in the cell and the story you had to write for those evil gods."
"How'd you know?"
"I have friends in low places," she teased.
She meant Ishtab. We plopped onto the beach and I spilled all the details. Brooks listened intently, tracing her fingers through the sand, nodding every few minutes like she could see the images my words painted.
"I wish I could have lied," I said, "to protect people from the gods' wrath."
She shoulder-bumped me.
"So when do I get to read this tell-all?"
My throat tightened.
"Brooks, read it? How about never?"
"What about Quinn?" I asked, wanting to change the subject.
"Her cover was blown when she took your side. She couldn't go back to Shibalba, so she's in a protection program until she can be reactivated. She's fine with it. She didn't like being with all those dead people anyway."
Rosie's eyes shot flames at the word dead.
"Meat!" I yelled. "I mean steak!"
My dog settled back down, licking her chops. I was definitely going to have to come up with a better command, or she might barbecue anyone in her path.
"You and Rosie are a perfect flame-throwing pair," Brooks said as she stroked Rosie's neck.
I laughed.
"So what now?"
Her amber eyes glittered in the setting sun. I took the jade from my pocket.
"You're not going to like it."
"But you're going to tell me anyway. I have to bust my dad out of prison."
"Another prison break? Ugh!"
She got to her feet.
"Ishtab will kill you for breaking your promise. And the gods will have your head on a spike if they find out you're alive."
"I don't have a choice. He risked everything for me. No way am I going to let him rot in some speck of dirt somewhere." Brooks stared out at the ocean with a deep scowl.
"I say we lay low for a while.
What if it were Quinn?" She threw me a glare.
"I'd storm the castle."
"Then I guess I'll storm the castle."
"You really are a pain, you know that?"
"So I've been told."
"Fine."
Brooks lifted her chin.
"But you so owe me."
"It could be dangerous." With half a smile, she said,
"I was built for danger."
"You're going to have to learn to swim," I told her as the waves crashed to the shore.
"No."
"Yes." Pulling her knees into her chest, she shook her head.
"Not doing it, Zane."
Rosie ran into the water like she was demonstrating that it was safe to go in. Brooks grabbed my hand.
"I'm glad you didn't die."
"Me too."
"If you ever leave me behind again, I'll kill you."
I stood and backed into the water slowly. "You'd have to catch me first. And in case you forgot, I'm a godborn." With a sigh, she shrugged.
"In case you forgot, I can fly."
Grinning, I launched myself into an oncoming wave. When I came up for air, I shook the water from my hair and looked toward the shore. Brooks was gone. She'd shifted into a hawk and was soaring over the sea, wings spread wide, their tips glistening in the sunlight. There was still so much I had to tell her, but it could wait. I watched her fly, thinking she was meant to be a hawk, and I was meant to be a godborn. Like Mr. O had said, destiny comes knocking, and if you don't open the door, she will come in through the window. That's important, because if you're reading this, you have a bigger destiny than you ever knew. Remember when Ishtab said all the other godborns died? I'm not so sure I believe her. Why would I be the only one left? And if there's even a tiny chance you're out there, I need to know. If you can read this, you've got magic in your blood. Only another godborn would be able to see the words on these last few pages, which is why I took the risk to write down the whole truth. I was hoping to find you, hoping I could trust you with the secret. If you wait long enough, your destiny will come knocking. Take it from me. Someday, when you least expect it, the magic will call to you. Elfin. This is Ozzy Rodriguez. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Stormrunner by J.C. Cervantes. This program was directed by Abby Craden. Executive producer, Dan Musselman. Text copyright 2018 by Jennifer Cervantes. Introduction copyright 2018 by Rick Riordan. Production copyright 2018, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.